Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, U.S. Envoy George Mitchell is in the Middle East, meeting with the presidents of Israel, Netanyahu, and of the Palestinians Mahmoud Abbas to talk peace, Jewish settlements, and Palestinian statehood. There is a lot on the table. Back in the States, an upstart lobbying group, J Street, is looking to help shape U.S. policy in the Middle East. It's territory long the turf of powerhouse lobbies like AIPAC, but J Street says our conversation on Israel has been hemmed in so tightly that even many American Jews haven't been heard. It calls itself pro-Israel and pro-peace. This hour on Point, we're talking with Jeremy Ben-Ami, founder of J Street. We'll hear later in this hour from Martin Peretz, editor-in-chief of The New Republic and a skeptic when it comes to J Street. Joining me now from Seattle is Jeremy Ben-Ami. He is founder and executive director of J Street, a young Washington-based lobbying organization that describes itself as the political arm of the pro-Israel, pro-peace movement. He served as a deputy domestic policy advisor to President Bill Clinton and as policy director on Howard Dean's presidential campaign. The New York Times calls his J Street the new Israel lobby. Jeremy Ben-Ami, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what was the need? Why does J Street exist, sir?
Well, I think there are three basic needs. Number one is that there hasn't been enough of a voice in Washington pressing strongly for peace as an essential interest of Israel and essential to its future and to its security. Two, there has not been an adequate voice of the progressive part of the American Jewish community when it comes to American foreign policy and the national interests we have in resolving these conflicts in the Middle East. And then really number three is from the perspective of the American Jewish community and its long-term health and vitality, there's the need to open up the conversation in our community about what is going on in Israel, what's happening in the Middle East, and what is the best course of American policy for Israel.
What do you mean by open up the conversation?
Well, for too long, the voices that have spoken on behalf of the community or who have proscribed the limits for the conversation in our community have really been further to the right than the consensus of the mainstream and moderate members of the community. And I think that's been drifting that way for a decade or two at this point. And there has also been an effort to say that there really is only one way to be pro-Israel, and it's either you follow that or you got to be anti-Israel. And that is a very unhealthy way to have an open and civil and very important conversation about what's best for Israel and for the United States.
Are you saying with that at this point J Street represents the mainstream of American Jewish opinion and AIPAC does not?
Well, we certainly don't set ourselves up in any way in opposition to AIPAC. There's a lot that AIPAC does stand for and that it does push and promote and represent that is terrific. And the strength of the U.S.-Israel relationship is due to the hard work that AIPAC has done over the last several decades. However, I do think that there is a very sizable portion of the American Jewish community, of Jewish Americans who do believe very strongly in a two-state solution, who hold views that, for instance, the settlements are counterproductive to Israel's interests, who believe that the United States needs to be very actively engaged in the process of resolving this conflict. And those views are held by, if not a majority of the community, a very sizable portion of the community, and you don't hear them very much from the established organizations.
The New York Times calls your group the New Israel Lobby and quotes you, Jeremy Ben-Ami, saying that your number one agenda item is to do whatever we can in Congress to act as the president's blocking back. I assume you mean in his push for peace talks, but how do you describe it? What do you mean by that?
No, that's exactly right. I think the president has laid out since the campaign and since really the very first day of his administration when he appointed George Mitchell as the special envoy, he has laid out a policy direction that we believe makes incredible sense both for the United States and for Israel. And that involved the appointment of George Mitchell on day one. It involved the speech in Cairo that he gave to the Muslim world. It has involved the priority that he has placed on resolving the conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians through a two-state solution. So I believe that he is, in fact, both on the right path and reflecting the views of many moderate Jewish Americans. However, there's going to be a lot of opposition, both in the political system, in Congress, in the Jewish community, to what he's trying to do. And when I say blocking back, what we're going to do is try to help him find the space, political space and other space, to push forward with that agenda.
President Obama is quoted in the Times piece by one major Jewish leader who met with him, along with yourself, in July, who had said that there shouldn't be disharmony between the U.S. and Israel. And the Times quote him saying that maybe you can verify that President Obama leaned back in his chair and said, "I disagree. We had 8 years of no daylight," they're referring to the George W. Bush presidency, "and no progress." Do you think there should be daylight or opposition between Israel and the United States, or harmony, or what are you looking for, Jeremy Ben-Ami?
Well, I think, first of all, the concept that any two countries in the world, you know, the United States and Great Britain, the United States and France, the United States and Australia, you know, the concept that two countries should have exactly the same interests and agenda at all times and should be moving in lockstep because they're friends, to me that makes no sense. And I think it actually is both unrealistic and bad policy. And if there is a place in which the United States needs to criticize what Israel is doing, or it needs to criticize what the Palestinians are doing and criticize what the Arab nations are doing, it should have the ability to do that on all sides. This is not simply a one-sided agenda here. You know, the conflict is between two parties, and both parties are doing things that are not helpful, and both parties need to be pushed and prodded and pulled and helped to get to a place that is in their own interests and certainly in the interests of the United States. But you can't get there if you're just hugging one side and not the other.
People may wonder, who are you, who is J Street, to assert that? Let's start with you, Jeremy. Give us a little sense of your family background. Back to your great-grandparents were among the very earliest Jews to settle as part of the creation of Israel.
Yeah, no, I'm very proud of my family history and background. My great-grandparents, as you said, 100 and almost 30 years ago at this point, were in the very first Aliyah, it's called, the very first mm-hmm. wave of immigration. They were 17 families that started a city called Petah Tikva in 1882, and they were one of those 17 families. And that was only the second town that was established in this wave of immigration. So they were in the very, very first wave. Then my grandparents actually were part of the 66 families that established Tel Aviv through a lottery on the sand dunes. They stood there in the April of 1909 and drew lots for their houses. And my father was part of the Irgun fighting for independence against the British and to rescue Jews from Europe. I have 500 cousins who live in Israel, and I myself lived there for a few years in the 90s. So I have very, very deep connections to Israel, and most of those who are involved as leadership or staff of J Street are deeply tied to Israel. We are friends, beyond friends. Israel means a lot to us personally and deeply, and we care about its future, and that's actually why we started J Street, is because of how much we do care about the future of the state of Israel.
So what kind of response are you getting from Jewish Americans? What kind of response are you getting from Congress, let's say?
I would say that, you know, it reflects the diversity of views within the community, which is something that mm-hmm. I acknowledge exists. I know there are many people who disagree with the views that we hold, and I know that there are many people who do agree. We've gotten vitriolic responses of opposition from those who disagree, many of whom don't buy the premise that there should ever be any disagreement, either publicly about where American Jews are or publicly about where we stand, the United States vis-a-vis Israel. And in Congress, we've also had people who, you know, think that we are obviously wrong, people who disagree with us. But the thing that has been so gratifying to me has been the overwhelming outpouring of support from those who feel they've never had a voice before. The level of enthusiasm, the meetings that I go to, the excitement that finally somebody is going to speak up for our part of the community has been overwhelming. And we have over 110,000 people now who are part of our online community. We have now grown the organization. We've doubled our budget, and we have 20-something people on staff. It has been a tremendous outpouring of support for what we're trying to do.
You're tiny compared to AIPAC in terms of staff and resources. We went to them and asked if they wanted to join. They said, "Oh, this is comparing apples and oranges." at your scale, much smaller than other groups on this turf. Can you make a difference?
Well, you know, we're not looking at this, as I said before, as a competition of groups. And I do wish that AIPAC would have agreed to join us for the conversation. They've actually never agreed to be part of any public conversation with J Street to this point, 18 months into our operation. I hope at some point they will, because what we are doing is really a complement to what they do. This is one issue that faces the U.S.-Israel relationship, albeit the most important one. But we do believe that the majority of what AIPAC is doing is extremely important, and we are only focusing on one part of this equation. And so for the type of agenda we have and the resources that we have, I think we can make a difference.
And doors open to you on Capitol Hill, or people saying, you know, no, I when I think about Israel, I listen to others, perhaps AIPAC, perhaps others?
The doors have been very, very open. Even those who really don't agree with the positions that we're taking are very willing. I think that one of the great things about our system and our democracy is that people are willing to listen in Congress to those with whom they disagree. And that's a page we could take into the American Jewish community and try to do that as well. But the doors on Capitol Hill have been open, and there are many, many members whose only question for us is, what took you so long?
Joined in a few minutes by Marty Peretz, editor-in-chief of The New Republic. Perhaps not a fan. We'll see. Let's go first to Brentwood, Tennessee, and Lori. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a rabbi, actually, here in the South. I'm in my late 30s, and I can tell you that working with my generation and the generation behind, these are the future of Jewish activists in America, and J Street is offering a refreshing and necessary voice in Washington and in the media to a whole population here in the American Jewish community. It's long been thought that to care about Israel and criticize Israel could never go hand in hand, and such thinking has virtually shut the door on so many Jews to feel like they could actually make a difference in seeing peace come about in the Middle East. And J Street is truly giving hope to so many that they can bring about change, and that peace and change in the Middle East could actually happen in our lifetime.
But what about AIPAC? It's been a very strong representative of Israel in Washington. What's the problem?
I wouldn't say that there's a problem at all. AIPAC has absolutely blazed the trail for there to be a Jewish voice in Washington, one that's been necessary for decades. But we are at a crossroads where it's not about one side or the other. It's about finding a road to peace. And sometimes thinking outside the box and taking a fresh perspective and a step back is what's necessary to bring about change. And J Street is bringing that fresh perspective. And I think if the ultimate goal could be for AIPAC and J Street to work together, that would, of course, be the ideal. And perhaps that's what will come.
Rabbi Lori in Brentwood, Tennessee, thanks very much for your call. Jeremy Ben-Ami, you're quoted saying, "We're trying to redefine what it means to be pro-Israel. You don't have to be non-critical." On what fronts? What do you mean, Jeremy?
Well, I think Lori hit it exactly on the head, which is that for too long, the pro in pro-Israel has required an anti. It's one side or the other. It's us versus them. The world is black and white. It's good versus evil. And I think that worldview is part of what gets us in trouble. And we're trying to redefine it exactly the way that Lori is saying it, to say that we favor the creation of a Palestinian state in the occupied territory of the West Bank and Gaza. We favor that. We are pro-Palestinian rights, and that is an extremely pro-Israel position to take, because Israel's future, its security, its existence, its very survival depends on the creation of this other state. So you can actually be pro-Israel and pro-Palestinian, and we can find win-win resolutions to conflicts that we've always assumed there just has to be a loser when there's a winner, and that doesn't have to be the case.
You have had some pretty tough pushback when we had all the fighting in Gaza back at the end of last year and into this year. Your campaign's director, Isaac Luria, sent out a message saying that while there's nothing right in raining rockets on Israeli families or dispatching suicide bombers, there's nothing right in punishing 1.5 million already suffering Gazans for the actions of the extremists among them. And you, as you know, had Rabbi Eric Yaffe, president of the Union for Reform Judaism, writing an op-ed in the Foreword describing these sentiments as morally deficient, profoundly out of touch with Jewish sentiment, and appallingly naive. What are you saying?
Well, I have the highest respect for Rabbi Yaffe, and he and I and others have saw that differently. And the great thing about Rabbi Yaffe is that he has made every effort to continue and open up a dialogue with us about these difficult issues. He agrees with 90% of the J Street agenda, I would say, in terms of the settlements and the ending the occupation and the need for American involvement. We disagreed on whether or not Gaza was actually a strategically good move and a morally right thing to do. We disagreed on that. But Rabbi Yaffe is coming to the J Street National Conference in October, and we're going to have a public conversation about some of these issues. And that's exactly the model that we should have in the community. We can disagree on whether or not the Gaza war was a good or a bad idea. I don't disagree that Israel had the right to do it. What I disagree is that it was a strategically bad move for Israel to do it, and it did have moral issues associated with it that were exposed yesterday again in the Goldstone report that was issued by the UN.
This is talking about human rights violations on both sides in that conflict. Jeremy Ben-Ami, founder and executive director of J Street, please stand by in Seattle. Joining us right now from New York is Martin Peretz, Marty Peretz. He's editor-in-chief of The New Republic, where he writes the blog The Spine. He serves on the board of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Marty Peretz, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
It's very good to have you. You've written recently about President Obama, who J Street is supporting, that you're sick and tired of President Obama's eldering or hectoring of Israeli leaders. Is J Street more of the same, or is this a healthy thing?
Look, there have been dozens of critical or Jewish organizations, that is, organizations who routinely criticize Israel, and I criticize Israel.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is not how much diversity one has, but whether the diverse opinions are actually reasonable and related to the facts on the ground. Jeremy was an aide to President Clinton. President Clinton spent an enormous amount of energy and time on trying to get a peace agreement between the Arabs, the Palestinians, and the Israelis. And it all ended in a big poof. I myself have always been in favor of a two-state solution. The two-state solution was the cornerstone of Zionist thinking. In 1947, when the General Assembly passed the partition plan, it was for a Jewish state, really hear that, Jewish state,
mm-hmm.
and an Arab state. The Arabs of Palestine did not pick up that call, and they screamed, actually, for the Syrians, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, in fact, also the Iraqis, to come in and fight a battle that they lost. In 1967, soon after the war, Israel was ready to give everything it had captured back. And the Arab countries and the Arabs of Palestine refused, of course, even to discuss these matters. And then in the Clinton plan, in the Clinton term, which had the most ambitious American diplomacy, diplomacy that I also had hopes for, the Israelis were willing to give up 95-96% of the territory that they had captured, and many other important concessions, and Arafat walked away from this. I find any discussion of Israeli policy and American policy useful and productive. The question is whether the view of J Street is a correct view. At this moment, J Street thinks that Israel will have to negotiate with Hamas. I think that's like saying that America should negotiate with Al-Qaeda.
Let me put Hamas aside for just a moment. We'll come to it. But if I may, Jeremy Ben-Ami, what about Marty Peretz's telling of history, of a framework as he lays it out here? Is this a telling that you differ with, that you're looking to move beyond? What are you thinking as you hear this critique?
Well, I actually don't view it as a critique. I mean, Marty is one of the most knowledgeable and thoughtful people on these issues, and he has it spot on in terms of history. My answer would be that I don't think you can drive forward by looking in the rearview mirror. I think you've got to be focused on the future. You've got to be focused on the facts, as Marty said, the facts on the ground today. In 2002, the Arab world put on the table what was then the Saudi Peace Initiative. It has been ratified by the entirety of the Arab world, offering, in exchange for a full resolution of the territorial issues between Israel and the Palestinians and Syria and Lebanon, full recognition and full acceptance of Israel into the community of nations and into their neighborhood. That's what we've been asking for since 1947 and 1948. So that offer wasn't on the table prior to 2002, and the desire of the Arab nations around Israel to actually resolve this conflict is much more real than it's ever been. Part of that is a shared view of the threat from Iran. The other thing that we have today is we have a Palestinian leadership, at least on the West Bank, and we can talk about Hamas and Gaza in a minute, but, you know, it would be hard to deny facts on the ground in terms of Abu Mazen and Prime Minister Salam Fayyad making significant progress on security, look, economy, et cetera. We have a partner. We have somebody to talk to
today.
Marty Peretz?
It isn't as if Israel is not talking to Abbas and Fayyad. They are, in fact, helping them in establishing a police force, which is being trained by the American General Dayton, a very discerning and reasonable man. Let me read you something from the New York Times, September 13th. Turki al-Faisal. He was for 25 years the head of the Saudi Arabian
intelligence,
CIA. Then he was ambassador to the United States.
And he had an op-ed piece in the Times this past weekend.
Yes. He is the son of a king, the nephew of the king, and the brother of the foreign minister. Here. Saudi Arabia is the birthplace of Islam, the custodian of its two holy mosques, the world's energy superpower and the de facto leader of the Arab and Muslim worlds. That is why our recognition is greatly prized by Israel. However, for all those same reasons, the kingdom holds itself to higher standards of justice and law. It must therefore refuse to engage Israel until it ends its illegal occupation of the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and the Golan Heights, as well as Shaba Farms, blah, blah, blah. For Saudis to take steps toward diplomatic normalization before this land is returned to its rightful owners would undermine international law and turn a blind eye to immorality. First of all, the haughtiness of this man and of this regime is mind-boggling. Secondly, this is a response, an ugly response, to Barack Obama's curtsying at Riyadh and to his Cairo speech.
Jeremy Ben-Ami, how do you respond to this op-ed piece from high-placed Saudi? Does it suggest that you, that Barack Obama, are wrong to be open to more open conversation on peace talks?
Well, I mean, Marty and I draw, you know, opposite lessons from the op-ed, obviously, and from the entire Saudi initiative. What the Saudis have said and many of the Arab nations have said is the prize at the end of the process the end result of finding a peace between Israel and the Palestinians will be full recognition of the state of Israel and its acceptance into the Middle East and into the community of nations.
This statement.
I didn't interrupt you, Marty.
You had 20 minutes already.
Let's just hear it out, and then we'll come to you, Marty. But, Jeremy, your point there?
The point is that they are saying no to the president, which I think is unhelpful, in his request for intermediate steps on the road to recognition, to do some things now to encourage Israel along the process. And what they are saying is no. You must end this occupation. You must create a Palestinian state. And at that point, when you pull back from the territories which you illegally hold, that you can have full recognition. And I think it's a negotiating position that they hold to. I think the carrot at the end of this stick is extremely attractive, and I think that it is the motivating force that Israel should be following to achieve a resolution to this conflict so that they, in fact, get the recognition and acceptance into their neighborhood from the entirety of the Arab community.
Marty Peretz, is it a bad thing to have this view in the mix, to have it in the conversation in Washington?
Well, look, every view that is held should be in the mix in Washington. That's not the issue. I want to know from Jeremy what the steps are that the Palestinians have to take. You see, I've always been for a two-state solution before the formula was coined. I couldn't imagine anything else but a two-state solution. And a one-state solution is a disaster. There is no Arab state, no Muslim state that actually is no Muslim state in the Middle East that is actually a tolerable state to live in and to raise children, although millions do. My anxiety, my deep fear, is that Israel will give up most of the settlements as it gave up all of the settlements in Gaza, and find that they will become the loading platform for missiles and other arms of aggression.
Let me take several calls right here. David in Brookline, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I would like to know what percentage of J Street's financial support comes from Saudi Arabia and other Arab sources. And a question for to Mr. Ben-Ami, why do you think that they support you?
We'll take that question up. Jeremy, please write it down and remember it. Let's get another right here from Destin, Florida. Brand, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, great to talk to you.
You too.
I was just, Jeremy, I was just going to say that I disagree with your assessment that AIPAC is you know, leaning to the right. I traveled with AIPAC to Israel, went across the country with a group of college Republicans and college Democrats, have been to their policy conferences and heard Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton as well as John McCain, mm-hmm. And other Republicans. So I think AIPAC is doing a great job. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for people who are promoting Israel. But the other point I'll make is that Israel elected Netanyahu, who obviously is a government that's to the right in Israel. And, you know, maybe this perception about American policy towards Israel being to the right is because that's where Israel's at right now.
Brand, good points and questions as well. We'll pick them up. And one more, Tracy in Boston. Tracy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My name's Tracy, and I'm actually an old friend of Jeremy's from the Clinton campaign. So hi, Jeremy.
Okay.
And I was wanting to take the conversation in a slightly different area, which is how to talk about this with your family.
What do you mean?
So I am very much in line with J Street. I have absolutely no divisions or qualms about supporting J Street's approach, but my in-laws certainly would view it as heretical. And you see, even among friendly people, how hard it is to have a civil conversation about this. So if
you've got high holidays coming up, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, are you afraid to bring it up, the J Street view? Okay.
So how can you, you know, just like what Obama is saying about we can disagree without being disagreeable, I find that if I even broach the topic of questioning any of Israel's policy stances, it is viewed as a very upsetting thing to say.
You know, but that's your personal problem. It isn't a social problem. I discuss with my kids who have different views from me, AIPAC, J Street. Too much of J Street's emotional push is to give someone a voice. There are so many voices, and J Street is one of them. The question is the voice right? This is not about your psychological issues with your in-laws, and this is demeaning to try to discuss this.
You know, Marty, you may be right, but Tracy feels it that way when she tries to discuss it in her family.
She feels it, and Jeremy also feels that you need more and more and more viewpoints. The question has to be, are the viewpoints correct?
Point taken. I'll put it to Jeremy, but let's pick up what our listeners have put on the table further, if we may. Jeremy David wants to know what percentage of J Street's financial support comes from Saudi Arabia. You heard Brand in Florida saying, how can you say AIPAC leans to the right? He disagrees. And anyway, Israel elected Netanyahu, so who are you to argue? And then you heard Tracy on the, you know, the, let's say, the high holidays conversation.
Thanks, Tom. First of all, the answer to the first one is really simple, which is zero. There is no money coming to J Street from Saudi Arabia. There has been a lot of fuss made on the Internet and some right-wing blogs about the fact that a small, tiny percentage, maybe 2 or 3% of our donors, are people whose last names are either Arab in descent or potentially they may be Muslims. I'm pleased that a very small number of Muslim and Arab Americans feel that J Street's agenda is so in line with their own in terms of finding peace and finding a two-state solution that they choose to support a pro-Israel organization. And perhaps there's actually a lesson here, that there is a way to broaden the consensus around this issue by being pro-Israel and pro-peace, and you can then actually attract some American support from Muslims and Arabs. So that's number one, but it's 0% comes from any foreign sources, and particularly from Arab countries. Second,
and let me endorse.
Let me finish. Marty, let me just run through the questions because I know we're almost out of time. The second is the question of, do we have to stand with whatever the policy is of the government of Israel? Well, I would say back to the caller from Florida that when Ehud Olmert was prime minister, he made some very clear statements that without achieving a peace deal, without achieving a two-state solution, the Jewish democratic state of Israel would be finished. Those are his words, not mine. Mm. I didn't hear AIPAC at that point, or many other groups in this country or leaders, picking up that line from the prime minister and saying, well, if that's the case, then this is the existential threat to the state of Israel, and we better do everything we can to help resolve this conflict. So I believe that there is a set of views coming from Israel that is very diverse. There is an argument going on in the Knesset. There's an argument at the dinner tables during the high holidays in Israel that is not able to happen here when we are part of the answer to opening up that conversation. And finally, to Tracy. Hi, Tracy. Very nice to hear your voice after all these years. It is really important for the people of Marty's generation to hear the calls that just came in from the rabbi, Lori, in Tennessee, and from Tracy, to deny that this sense of being muzzled exists, to deny that this sense that I cannot speak, not only within my family, within my synagogue, within my federation, within my community, to my friends about this topic, to deny that that feeling exists and to say it's a personal psychological issue is to completely miss the point, because this is a community-wide phenomenon. And there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Jewish Americans who share these views and share that sentiment, and it is sowing the seeds of the long-term disintegration of the American Jewish community if those feelings are allowed to fester and continue.
But,
and we have to open up the
conversation. Can I say something
about this? I mean, just want to put your question to Jeremy. Marty Peretz says this is an emotional appeal, but not a correct appeal, Jeremy.
Oh, that I'm fine with. You know, I would love to spend the hour actually debating.
Yes,
you know,
I would love
what Marty Peres said is, you know, he said that the security situation and all sorts of very good reasons are there not to proceed. But he also said at the same time that the status quo leads us to a road that is unacceptable. So then what is the solution? I would love to have that conversation.
So I asked you earlier what you think the Palestinians have to do, and the Arab states, but particularly the Palestinians, what they have to do to be parallel to Israeli concessions.
Well, I think that the first thing that has to happen is the continued investment in the security apparatus in the West Bank. And I think that the work that you pointed out that's being done is an incredibly important step that has been taken by the Palestinians over the last couple of years to have a police force that is sufficiently able to keep the peace in cities in the West Bank that the Israeli armed forces have felt that they could pull back. That's an incredibly important step. That work is going on right now.
And a concession from the Israelis. An important concession from the Israelis.
Right, and so I'm just saying there are things being done. There is an economy being built. There is a security apparatus being built. There is no question that steps are being taken by the Palestinians on the West Bank to create the type of state that Israel wants to have as its neighbor.
Oh, so Israel, are you saying that Israel does want another state as its neighbor?
I know, and you know as well, that 75% of Israelis support...
You just said that Israel... you said that Israel is helping this process. It couldn't happen without Israel.
Absolutely. Marty, I am not saying that everything good that happens in the world happens on one side and everything bad happens on the other. There are many things happening in the region that are positive, and part of that is the cooperation that's happening on security. So things are happening. The occupation is still in place. The settlement enterprise continues unabated. The chances of actually having a Palestinian state diminish by the hour and by the day as the continuation of the building and the construction of an infrastructure that completely separates the Palestinian people from the Jewish settlers on the West Bank. That continues as well. That has to stop or there will be no future. That can't be affected by the Palestinians. That can only be stopped by the Israelis.
And what is the reciprocal point?
The continued abatement of violence, the continued putting into placement of security apparatus. I believe steps have to be taken by the Palestinians to cut back on incitement, Marty. I would agree with you.
Jeremy, let me ask you if I may. Barack Obama, President Obama, has asked for a freeze on Jewish settlements in the West Bank. That has not been forthcoming. Does the existence of a group like yours or the point of view that you're putting out today give him support in pushing for that? Does it change the chemistry in this country, or are you too small, I don't know, too marginal to make a difference?
Well, let me also say just what he has been pushing for are steps on all sides. He has pushed for a settlement freeze. He has pushed the Palestinians for further steps to end violence and incitement. And he has asked...
What would that mean, Jeremy?
A loading dock for missiles, Marty Peretz suggests.
Sorry?
A loading dock for Palestinian missiles, Marty was saying earlier, is what he fears. He says his anxiety, his deep fear if that should come to pass.
As happened in Gaza.
Mm. Of course, but remember that in Gaza there was a unilateral withdrawal with a refusal, an outright 100% refusal on the part of the Israelis to do anything in coordination with anybody Palestinian. What we are saying is you need a negotiated resolution, not only between Israel and the Palestinians, but a regional comprehensive peace that will include internationally guaranteed security commitments, because the fears that Marty is laying out are the fears that must be addressed. If we do not provide sufficient security guarantees to the Israelis, there is no hope for peace. I totally agree with that. The way to do that, though,
would
not
say
to unilaterally pull out from Gaza.
Why don't you say that in your materials?
Sorry?
Why don't you say that in your materials?
We do.
Let me take a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. I have a question, and it's a simple question, but it's a question that I never can get answered.
Okay.
And the question is that for as long as I could ever remember, United States foreign policy as far as the Middle East has inadvertently been shaped around Israel. in blood and treasure. You can't even get elected in this country unless you support Israel sometimes 100%, and God forbid you criticize any of their policies. So my question is, we give so much to that region, to that area, and our foreign policy over there is shaped around that country. What do Israel give to us? What do they do for the United States? No other foreign country do we shape even our political landscape around. No other country.
Carl, let us pick it up. Jeremy Ben-Ami, first to you. You can't get elected without a certain position, and what does the United States get in return? How do you answer that question?
Well, let me just first of all say I think it's extremely unfortunate that is the position that we have gotten ourselves into by the way in which we have promoted the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. And I think that the types of concerns that are being expressed are exactly what is ultimately going to come back and bite both the American Jewish community and Israel. And we have to be very careful about how we pursue this lobbying and this pro-Israel positioning within the United States. So I understand and I hear the concerns. Israel is the single strongest ally of the United States in the region. It should be an asset for the United States to have a democracy, a Western-style economy, a place that shares its values and its interests in that region. It should be the bastion of stability. It should be the bastion of an economic growth and vitality that begins to sap the wellspring of terrorism in that area. If young kids there are getting jobs and there's a booming and growing economy, they won't have to go into terrorism. They won't go and be attracted by the extremists in the mosques. They will have a future. And Israel should be able to be a jumping-off point for that in the region. There should be a relationship between Israel and its neighbors that provides the economic engine for the region that will advance American interests in security and stability. So there's a lot that could be gained, and there's a lot of advantage to having a very strong ally in that region of the world. But I do believe that you're right in pointing out that there are questions being asked and that we have to be very careful about how we pursue pressing for the special relationship that exists between the United States and Israel.
Marty Peretz, what do you think about, Carl says there's a kind of inhibition about American conversation around Israel and the Middle East that's become a problem for this country. How do you look at that critique?
Well, first of all, I don't see much of a inhibition. There are a lot of Christian churches, at least the officialdom of Christian churches, that are taking anti-Israel actions.
Of course, many that are very, very supportive as well, evangelical in particular.
Absolutely, and there are mainstream Christian churches outside the evangelicals.
And for those who are critical, are you saying they're anti-Israel because they're critical?
No. Well, it really depends in what way you are critical. The efforts to divest from Israel, those are little pinpricks, but they represent, I think, an emotional and a theological hostility to Jews and the Jewish state. And that still also exists in America. And it exists in a strange way, particularly among the left. But actually, I don't think it's an important force.
Is it time for a new generational view, as Jeremy Ben-Ami says, Marty Peretz? Just got half a minute here, but we're kind of speaking one generation to another with you and Jeremy on the air. What about the generational?
Well, I don't appreciate being seen as an elder.
It's an august position, sir.
I'm 70 years old, but
okay, you're a kid.
I think pretty young.
Okay, we'll take that. But is there a generational transition underway here, or are you saying you hope not?
I believe there is not. J Street, I think, is an epiphenomenon. That's okay. There have been lots of J Streets before the establishment of the state. There was something called the American Council for Judaism, which had wanted nothing to do with Zionism, and they also had followers.
We're going to have to go right there for now. Marty Peretz with The New Republic, great to have you with us. And Jeremy Ben-Ami with J Street, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.